Okie dokie. Hey, so what happened to our show Saturday, yesterday, in Residence 104.4?
I don't know. Apparently, we did not go out on the air. In fact, I got an email from somebody saying that he thinks that they were actually having sex. Somebody in Residence 104.4 FM on the mixing desk.
Wow. Now, what were they mixing up on the mixing desk, I wonder? Some baby batter. Hola. Resonance 104. Well, this is Sunday roast time. Time to look at the Sunday Times. This is the only paper I can find on Sundays. This is why we look at the Sunday Times. No, nothing else comes out. No Financial Times.
No.
No International Herald Tribune.
No.
Only the Sunday Times.
Yeah.
And so, what's going on with Blair and Brown? So, apparently, Brown is being vilified as some evil, Dr. Evil.
Well, it sounds really kind of like a high school situation. He said, she said, he stinks.
Yeah.
It's that kind of stuff, basically. Mm-hmm. Blair's people are, all his cabinet members, in fact, are apparently telling newspapers like The Guardian that, well, we were going to stand behind Brown when Blair stepped down, but now we think he's mendacious.
Uh-huh. That's Oxford talk for he's a big, fat liar.
Exactly.
Well, you know, the thing is that people have lost the point here. The reason why Blair is being asked to get out quick is because his policies are killing British soldiers for no reason.
Exactly.
And his policies are bringing things like bus bombs in the center of London for no reason. People want Blair out because he's killing people.
Mm-hmm.
Brown is the next to go. The sooner Blair's out and Brown's in, the chances of death in London and death overseas goes down. But, of course, that would require that people in Britain admit the fact that they have completely tied their horse to a loser over there in the United States with Bush. It would admit that their policies are inherently corrupt, and it would admit a role in the banking sector to the genocide and the murders in London. But they're unwilling to make those connections. So they get into this adolescent squabble. Meanwhile, soldiers are dying. So how can you have any sympathy for the dying soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan? I think some more British soldiers just got blown up in Afghanistan. Well, don't ask me to be sympathetic for this, that's all. I mean, if you want to play kids' games and use these soldiers as toy soldiers in a video game, that their deaths are meaningless, then don't at the same time write big editorials about our brave soldiers. They're not. They're toys that you're throwing into battle to blow up because you're kids.
And so, in the meantime, this is probably the most embarrassing of the whole last week in British politics, was that apparently there was a leaked memo by some of the Downing Street stage managers who were trying to organize the Blair farewell tour. So when he was going to leave, he was going to do it on his own terms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is what the memo said. He needs to go with the crowds wanting more. He should be the star who won't even play the last encore.
Well, that opportunity was lost several years ago. That opportunity was lost when Donald Rumsfeld said he would invade Iraq with or without Britain help.
Uh-huh.
And Blair, that was his cue to say, well, we have some value to our British soldiers. We're not going to invade. We're not going to do shock and awe with you, Rumsfeld, because you obviously have no respect for our soldiers at all, and you treat them like toys on a toy battlefield, and that their deaths are meaningless. But instead, he just went along. He developed his reputation as Bush's poodle, rightfully so. And now, how can he expect any kind of dignified exit when he's been treated like this poodle of the American foreign policy, the Bush White House for all these years? He's completely raised the risk of Londoners and everyone in England and Britain considerably under his tenure. And he's been a disaster for people's health, wealth, and security. Why should he go out with any kind of dignified exit? He should be tossed out on his ear.
But
seriously, I mean, he should be tossed out.
But Tony Blair, famously, he studied acting, right? He used to want to be an actor when he was at university. So how much like an actor does he sound in this, that quote? He needs to go with the crowds wanting more. He should be the star who won't even play the last encore. So it goes back to that pre-Descartes thing. Your ear has hearing qualities. Terrorists have evil qualities. Prime ministers have prime minister-like qualities. They're not actually these things.
They have forsaken because they refuse to put any kind of cause and effect to these problems, these mm-hmm. these bombs that are going off. They refuse to see the connection. They refuse to see the fuse that lets the bomb off goes all the way back to the banking system in their own backyards. They refuse to see that. So they resort to Middle Ages type reasoning of non-rationale, non-intelligence, non-knowledge-based reasoning of we're fighting evil and we're doing it by using stuff that has truthiness to it, has truth-like qualities to it. And this other phrase that they use really is it gets under my skin. That he's going to go out on his own terms.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem with that is this, it's denying the fact that the world is rapidly changing and you don't get to shape the world in your image, especially when you're a failed leader, as is the case with Blair and Bush. The world is going to shape your exit now because you've totally blown it. And you're not in any position to demand going out on your own terms. You have failed miserably as a prime minister. You've made your people less secure. And Gordon Brown's stewardship over there at the Exchequer has done an okay job with the economy. However, that is suspect on a number of fronts as well. But nevertheless, you're not really in a position to demand your exit as being one way or another. You're a failed potentate. You're a failed leader. Get off stage. But because, of course, the people behind the prime minister are the corporations who, thinking in terms more of brand image. I mean, this is the same thing with Coca-Cola. Does Coca-Cola want to gracefully exit India where they're selling pesticides and causing all kinds of mayhem and death? No, they want to, if they have to be forced out of India, they want to do so on their own terms. You know, like the British were forced out of India last time on their own terms. They had a big ceremony. They handed it over. They wore pretty costumes. They got to do the whole Go Britannica thing. But unfortunately, the world is much more globalized now, and a country like Britain or America don't have the ability to just craft their own scenarios because their own scenarios are being just written in real time by people in the blogs and the podcasts and the vlogging universe that can see what's really going on. And they're writing – those are the people that are writing history now. It's not that Sunday Times is not writing history. It's the internet, the citizens, the netizens.
Speaking of Coke and Pepsi being banned in India, did you see this story which was sent to us by Mr. Joe Bushy? The selling of Coca-Cola and Pepsi has been prohibited in the Istanbul Convention and Exhibition Center, which hosts 1.5 million people annually. Now, the guy who runs it says he's going to be losing money, obviously, because he would be paid more just from the income from Coca-Cola. He said, but however, the health of the Turkish people is more important for us.
Well, this is the choice people have to make, their health or Coke. You know, yeah. This is the choice people have to make. It's a blaringly obvious, and not so blaringly obvious to Blair, but it's obvious to those who choose to use knowledge to inform their decisions and not pre-Descartes hokum. But nevertheless, these two companies, Coke and Pepsi, this is what they have to fight against. They have to somehow market their way past the fact that their products are inherently bad for your health and cause huge health complications and huge social unrest and ecological devastation. This is what their marketing has to overcome. And it's difficult to do so because you don't have monopolized marketing and media anymore. You have media been fractured into millions of sub-channels on YouTube, and you get very quickly sussed out. At Coca-Cola, you know, it's being held aloft. We know pretty much at this point that the stock's being bought by the U.S. government, as is the case with the U.S. government buying General Motors stock to try to keep that company from going under as a socialism. America crawls back into a socialist shell because it can no longer compete capitalistically anymore. Same thing with Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola's not being competing out there. America's crawling back into a socialist shell, and the U.S. government's buying Coca-Cola stock.
Well, do you want to hear about another dangerous brand?
Yeah, I'm always
very deadly
for the
brand.
Dangerous brand story.
This is Tony Blair's brand, and that's the War on Terror.
Mm.
This is a pretty shocking story out today in The Observer. U.K. intelligence agents did have a role in IRA bomb atrocities. The controversy over claims that Britain allowed two IRA informers to organize human bomb attacks intensified this weekend. A human rights watchdog has handed a report to the police service of Northern Ireland, which concludes that two British intelligence agents were central to the bombings of three army border installations in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
The human bomb tactic involved forcing civilians to drive vehicles laden with explosives into army checkpoints and included deadly sorties near Nuri and Koshkin outside Derry. Six British soldiers and a civilian worker at an army base died in the simultaneous blast on either side of Northern Ireland. This human bomb strategy was the brainchild of British intelligence, the investigation concluded.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this weekend we know in London there were these, the 9/11 truth movement, Academics for Truth, about 9/11 were speaking, and everybody's like, oh, it's a conspiracy theory. Why would the government allow things to happen? No way would a government do this. But now it's turning out that in the last war on terror against the IRA terrorists, in fact, the British military allowed their informers to do this.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. When people are struggling for freedom, the monopolist uses this as an opportunity to make some quick bucks. Whether it's the IRA struggling for freedom, the Iraqis struggling for freedom, the Palestinians struggling for freedom, the Lebanese struggling for freedom, people in Africa struggling for freedom, the monopolists say, hey, we're going to go in there and help you. But really, they're going to go in there and bomb you. And they do it because they can make a quick bucks because they sell the bombs. Now, this IRA story is presumably just to fan the flames of sectarian violence to sell more guns?
Well, yeah, I think it was to sell more guns and to sell probably identity card schemes of the time.
Right.
And then it goes on to say, here's another story related. The war on terror has directly killed a minimum of 62,006 people.
Mm-hmm.
Created 4.5 million refugees and cost the United States more than the sum needed to pay off the debts of every poor nation on earth.
Right. Plus the ecological costs, like the huge oil spill in Lebanon recently.
Mm-hmm. And if estimates of other unquantified deaths of insurgents the Iraq military include during the 2003 invasion, those not recorded individually by Western media and those dying from wounds are included, then the death toll could reach as high as 180,000.
Mm-hmm. And this is directly responsible for the of the banks.
Exactly.
Who see a way to lend money. And the business model is to kill people because it's highly profitable because you don't have to compete. You just kill people. That's what it's all about, banks killing people.
Well, where's Bjorn Lomborg on the cost-benefit analysis of this?
Yeah, exactly. Where is Bjorn Lomborg on this? I see Bjorn Lomborg... where's Bjorn Lomborg? Where is he? Who is he? He's that guy who wrote up the Copenhagen consensus.
Uh-huh.
Trying to come up with a cost-benefit analysis of fighting various global problems based on the most effective use of a buck. But, yeah, I mean, so you've got this IRA story where the IRA presumably blew up people during that the Troubles.
Mm-hmm.
But now it turns out that the British government was the one sponsoring the bombing.
Yes, some of them. Mm-hmm. In order to for propaganda purposes,
mm-hmm.
They allowed six British soldiers to die.
So, I mean, the 7/7 bombing, we have to really ask yourself, was the British government and British intelligence really behind that to some degree?
Well, that's the difference. In the 20 years since the IRA bombings, you know, the collateral damage that the government used to allow were soldiers. So they allowed six British soldiers to be killed.
Right.
In order to manipulate the population. Now they let civilians be killed instead.
Right. Right. Because this new wealth and income gap around the world makes it easier for the wealthy to see the poor as subhuman.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have any connection to these people. This is the whole Nazi thing going on in people, rich people's minds. They naturally drift toward Nazis. And anyone who's, you know, got a net worth of less than $5 million is considered subhuman.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you can see it happening. The Economist magazine pointed out 2 weeks ago that there's a huge problem in the U.S. Virgin Islands. There's no security for the seaplanes. Anyone can get on a seaplane, crash it into a cruise ship within 10 seconds of takeoff. No one's doing anything about it because the people, the wealthy people who are going to benefit from this are positioning themselves to make money based on this. They know there's a problem. The people who are going to get killed during this, they don't have any value to the bankers and the overlords, so they're going to let it happen.
That's what we've talked about many times this past week.
Mm-hmm. How about this little story, Sweet Pea?
Okay, what's that? Sweet Pea.
Stolen body parts implanted in NHS patients.
Is that the Alistair Cook guy?
Alistair Cook guy. Alistair Cook is a journalistic titan.
Yeah, but remember his bones were stolen?
That's right. Alistair Cook's bones were stolen. And implanted.
Yeah.
That's right. It says here that NHS patients have been implanted with potentially contaminated pieces of bone from a batch stolen from dead Americans, including the veteran broadcaster Alistair Cook.
Oh, you see, I was right.
Right. Well, I mean, the thing is, we say all the time that America is a dead country. The rest of the world's already dancing on the grave. People say, oh, you're so anti-American. I'm just calling it as it is. America is already in the past. It's so far in the past that people are robbing the grave and selling the bones.
Mm-hmm.
Only Americans are unaware of this.
Yeah. Wow. Well, they're becoming more and more. This is that whole convergence between America and China. China does this as well, but they do it, you know, that's the next step. That's the stepping stone, as you were talking about yesterday, to the next step for Americans will be just killing their dissidents and selling their bones rather than waiting for them to die naturally.
No, they don't even wait for them to die in China. Yeah, they just steal their organs outright when they're living. Living organ donations.
How do you think Dick Cheney's still alive?
All those heart transplants from Chinese hearts.
Exactly.
They're starting to use chopsticks over there in the White House. I don't know why. More than 70 pieces of bone were grafted into the patients of about 20 hospitals after they were imported from Tony Soprano, basically. Imported from New Jersey, which is Tony Soprano's backyard, basically. New Jersey is one of the biggest mafia centers in the United States.
Do you think people give a shit? No, they don't. You know, British consumers were found to be using collagen products that were used with the collagen taken from Chinese dissidents.
Oh, that's right. Remember that story?
Yeah. Big nothingness coming out of there.
Nobody
cared.
Because it's a ghoulish society that has a zombie society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was looking over my notes yesterday, and I got that story I picked up again, which is America Online. This woman was trying to cancel her grandfather's America Online account because he was dead.
Mm-hmm.
But America Online failed to cancel the account. They were still getting a monthly fee.
Yeah.
But this is true throughout the economic business world. It doesn't matter if you're alive or dead. If you're dead, you can steal your bones. If you're alive, you can steal your organs. As long as there's some RFID tag beating into some piece of plastic somewhere in your body, somewhere in your house, we can charge you every month for this as a subscription that we said we charged you. It doesn't matter if you're alive or dead. They keep charging your estate, and then they'll write off the debts eventually, but not after those debts have been sold three or four times with various banks back and forth collecting a fee each time.
Mm-hmm.
So life is not the barrier to business anymore.
No.
You don't have to be alive to make these companies money anymore.
No.
Which was, let's see, what else? So it's NHS patients. So moving right through the fabulous Sunday Times here. Speaking of Sweet Pea, you know, Sweet Pea was the name of the child between Popeye and Olive Oil.
Yeah, it was. Is Sweet Pea in the news?
No. Didn't I just call you Sweet Pea?
Yes, you did.
So here, the rich people, you know, they don't want to take any responsibility for the fact that they're causing huge wealth and income gaps and causing violence.
No.
So what they're doing is they're giving spy cameras to the neighborhoods where all the unfortunate poor people have to live to spy on each other. Secret cameras used to catch nasty neighbors. Councils are supplying householders with covert spy cameras so they can amass evidence against nuisance neighbors.
Uh-huh.
The devices are so small they can be hidden in a pot, plant, or door frames and provide 24-hour surveillance to capture evidence of vandalism, threatening behavior, or abuse.
Well, it's smart by the feudal leaders because, of course, it helps those poor people get rid of their angst about their situation, and they can redirect that sort of anger towards their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they did to the black community in America. Let them gun each other down.
Exactly. I mean, they create a ghetto by extracting all the wealth from that community. The people left behind are angry, and they end up fighting each other, killing each other. Now you're giving them spy equipment to spy on each other. This is a huge industry because now all these people are going to be creating huge revenue streams of all the spy equipment that will be poured into this community, subsidized by the taxpayer, but of course supplied by some private corporation. So some private corporation who supplies all the spy equipment is going to get the contract, courtesy of the UK taxpayer, is going to pay for this, to spy on these neighborhoods that are in complete disarray because those people who are selling the spy equipment are doing their darndest to swap all the equity in the economy with debt and in the NHS, in the education, in the transportation system, crumbling infrastructures due to debt for equity swapping. And this is just another example of that. The overlords are having a laugh really, at the expense of the council estates and the underclass. And the situation is getting worse, and it's leading to more violence. And Tony Blair is a direct result of the violence because he's allowed this to happen. He should resign immediately because it's a disgrace. And they're playing footsie down there in Whitehall, and people are dying. So, I mean, as long as they're comfortable with blood on their hands, then that's fine. But at least admit it. Say, you know what? We don't care if dead UK soldiers. We revel in it. So we're going to stay around and play footsie.
I think, you know what? I don't think he should resign. I think I want some more action. I really would love to see a fist fight. Like, imagine them tumbling out of the front door of 10 Downing Street, just beating the shit out of each other. It would make all the last 2 years worth it, the suffering that we've had.
Oh, my God.
And then we slap them both with an ASBO.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I agree with you. It's that would be the only saving grace, is if they just completely degenerated into a mob, into kid street fighting.
Or some, like, a duel. Do a duel. Like, take some swords or something. Go out into Trafalgar Square. Give us some entertainment. If you want a feudal system, that's what happened during the feudal times. You know, give us all the fun of feudalism.
Yeah, duels.
Mm-hmm.
I always liked it. I wish there were duels. I wish I lived during a time of duels.
No, you don't.
First of all, I'd be dead already.
I would be dead
20 years ago.
Max challenges somebody every single day. Luckily, we don't live in that sort of time anymore, because everybody goes, what? Are you a crazy American? Go away.
So what do we think of Rod Little?
Well, he's kind of a buffoon, really. I mean, sometimes he says good, you know, cool things, but usually he's just a wanker, as they say.
Yeah. Yeah. He's writing here about Dave Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's making some decent points here. He calls him Wobbly Dave.
Yeah.
Shapes up to be the Tofu Tory.
Okay.
And
So he's eating too much tofu, he's saying, which is giving him boobs. Moobs.
Moobs? Because they're just they're full of the hormones.
Yeah, estrogen. It's female hormone.
Yeah, they put it into the tofu. They put it into the soybeans.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up with moobs.
Yep.
I had to stop. I was getting those moobs. I was up to a B cup.
Yeah, your voice was just getting so high-pitched, honey. Oh
my God. So apparently Cameron is in India.
Mm-hmm.
In his entourage in Mumbai, one of the vans hit a pedestrian. Some woman named Prima Nayak.
Did he kill her?
It says Prima Nayak, a 55-year-old Indian woman, mowed down by David Cameron's entourage in Mumbai, seems to be feeling a little better, according to the hospital reports. She'd been attempting to cross a road when one of Cameron's minibuses ran over her.
Mm-hmm.
She was seriously injured, and the driver of the minibus reportedly took a kicking from angry bystanders.
Oh, my God.
Enraged, either by the accident or at Cameron's wholly superfluous presence in the subcontinent. We eagerly await news of the next Indian PR disaster, that he inadvertently sets fire to some beggars, for example, or punches a cow.
Cows are holy there, aren't they?
That's right, honey.
Yeah.
Cameron was in India to share with the world his wildly unoriginal views on the global economy, which can be summarized as this. It's very big indeed. There's not much we can do about it, and protectionism isn't the answer. You will recall the photo op of David on a dog sled enjoying some bewildered huskies to mush as he trundled uneasily down the wrong glacier in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
Or David earnestly cycling to work in London, followed by a discreet distance by a gas-guzzling limousine to carry his Filofax.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Basically, he's saying David Cameron is basically a buffoon. He did say last week, David Cameron wrote that, you know, we should stop looking to America and Europe as a business model and look toward India and the East.
Mm.
You know, him being in India makes me think that maybe a good idea might be to liven up the House of Commons and get more people interested and actually engaged in politics would be bringing the monkeys in. As, you know, India has that big problem of monkeys are always, they're holy as well.
Mm-hmm.
They have all these holy animals there. It's just they run amok everywhere, but especially the monkeys. They steal things.
They have monkey prisons there.
They have monkey prisons, yes, because they're not allowed to kill them, so they lock them up in prison for being bad.
Mm-hmm. And they give an ASBO.
That would be a great private contract to have.
Monkey prisons?
Monkey prisons. Bad monkey. Bad monkey.
Off to prison you go.
I guess that means that they can be rehabilitated, because isn't that the purpose of prison?
Apparently. Apparently. Well, they have... now, monkeys are able, using this new software and computer technology, they can move the cursor on the screen using their mind waves.
Yeah, I know.
Well, humans can do this. You know, humans who have lost the use of their arms, they've developed this software. You can use your mind waves to move a cursor on the computer screen. And using what appears to be telekinesis, but apparently, as I figured this was going to happen myself, I've talked about this for a number of years, the mind generates a certain aura, digital aura, which can be picked up and translated into instructions, and you can train your mind to set off certain oral instructions to move the cursor on the computer screen, and monkeys, of course, can be trained to do this, and it won't be too long before the monkeys figure out how to hire a lawyer.
You think so?
Absolutely. And they'll be defending themselves in those monkey prisons to get themselves out. And you'll have high street lawyers will be trundling down to India to defend monkeys to get them out of monkey prison, because the monkeys figured out how to hire the lawyer.
Well, you know, I think the monkeys, how they deal with the monkeys in India is a good place for us to look at how to deal with feral, so-called feral youth. Is there all these boys, little boys running amok in Britain, just like the monkeys run amok in India. But in India, how they deal with it is they do have monkey prisons for the repeat offenders. But what they do is they bring in, I'm not sure if it's a baboon or something, but like a really masculine, angry male that scares them all. And I think that's what they should do is in Britain is forget setting, you know, effete David Cameron with moobs to say, oh, everybody should behave better and hug your hoodie. You know, they should just put some sort of dominant male in there and allow them, you know, stop being so PC and allow them to beat these boys who are like running amok. Mm-hmm. And the boys will just be quiet and start doing their homework and
insert dominant males into the community.
Exactly. Because right now there are none. They disappear.
Right.
Or they're effete or they're put in prison for being dominant.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're right. You're right. They need to do some, what do you call it? Yeah, like
they have to allow more dominance. Like it brings it back to this whole Tony Blair, Gordon Brown thing. They're like gossiping, and you know he's got a fat ass. Well, he looks bad in a bathing suit. You know, it's stuff like that. Let's see a fight. Let's see a rumble in Trafalgar Square, man.
Yeah, so they just didn't put dominant males into that situation, and to restore some balance.
Exactly. Instead of locking up the guys that spank these kids.
Mm-hmm. So here's a story. Apparently there's a French writer. She lives in London. And she's talking about how France has to protect itself against consumerist zombies.
Is that what she says?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
With no understanding of philosophy, beauty, or art.
Yeah.
So, in the latest salvo in a Brit-bashing barrage, as France struggles to defend its identity against what many fear is the inexorable advance of Anglo-Saxon free market ideas and globalization, this is a wake-up call to French voters, said Agnès Poirier, author of The English Model, A French Illusion, which is published this week. In her view, the two main candidates in France's presidential election, Nicolas Sarkozy, the center-right interior minister, and Ségolène Royal, the socialist, are Blairites, who would import British policies if elected. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
You already see it definitely in Sarkozy.
Yeah. He does the whole ASBO thing.
Yeah. For a self-proclaimed Anglophile, Poirier, 34, who has worked as a journalist in London for the past decade and as a British boyfriend, does not pull her punches. From our culture to our cuisine, from our education system to our general manners, we are found wanting. We do not even have any intellectuals, she sniffs, and the notion of political protest so prized in France fizzled out long ago on our side of the channel. Adopting the English model would overturn our way of eating, thinking, even loving, finally, to reach our very soul. She relates with humor and anecdote with the failure of school children to identify common vegetables such as courgettes and potatoes when Jamie Oliver, the chef, held them up before a classroom. Well, yeah, of course. You know, the thing is, here in Paris, in France, you have a sense that it has been hasn't been overridden, I would say, by the Anglo-Saxon model. And as a result, it's a it's actually civilized. It's a, you have a notion of civilized, and where if you're in the Britain or America, it's uncivilized. It's basically dog eat dog. There's no attempt to have any kind of civilizing influences coming from the top, because the top has been overrun by hoodies, basically, in suits. And as a result, society is gaping wide open wealth and income gaps, and it's hugely violent, and it's crumbling. So why would you want to import that into France?
Well, exactly. And the entire Anglo-Saxon sort of economies are based, or basically casino economies. So it's pure luck. So there's no reason to educate yourself or participate in society, because it's random who is plucked in the casino economy. I think that Anglo-Saxon economics is actually really falling apart now, because equity extraction and, you know, speculation is clearly has a limit.
Well, because people debate things here, they didn't invade Iraq.
Exactly.
And they're the much better off for it, because, and it's obvious to them at the time that it was a bogus invasion and a bogus war for bogus reasons by bogus people. And they had the ability to debate it, bring it to the population and say, look, this is horseshit. We're not going to go into Iraq. So they didn't go into Iraq. Meanwhile, now this, the French economy is a lot stronger for it. The U.S. economy is sinking into the quagmire. Billions and billions of dollars every month wasted. Reputation is diving. U.S. products are now seen as being sold by the devil. Coca-Cola is now, you know, more and more being rejected all over the world. And the only way the stock price can stay up is if the U.S. government itself is buying its, the stock in its own company. Well, that's exactly what, you know, supposedly America defeated with the end of the Cold War, communism. Communism, price fixing, and the state fixing prices and buying contracts. Well, this is what exactly what America's doing now, except they're doing it with the consumer products instead of war profits. They let the war profiteers start wars to sell guns and ammunition, and they call that free enterprise. But when it comes to a consumer product now in America, if it starts to fail, the U.S. government buys stock in the company like Coca-Cola or General Motors. They call that capitalism? It's socialism. It's communism. It's not communism in the Marxist Engels sense. It's communism in the China-Russia sense of statist, state-controlled, you know. And it's just, I find it amazing that these libertarians on the web are talking about America should be slightly less of a statist, and they're talking, you know, downplaying the role of the U.S. government. They don't even mention the fact that in the past 20 years, the rise of the state in America has gone off the charts to compete with the worst of Cold War Soviet Union. You know, because they refuse to accept the fact that it's happening in the financial markets, because they feel that the financial markets are immune from any criticism. They just assume that they are perfect because they buy into this new feudal idea of the markets as Pope and that they're infallible. Meanwhile, as we know, the markets are utterly corrupt. They have about as much relevancy to freedom and democracy as the Pope has with God. I mean, there is no, you cannot draw a connection there.
Well, there is in America. There is no state for the poor. If you're under a certain income level, as we saw in Katrina, there is no state for you. However, there is a giant state, as we saw in Katrina, for the rich. Because remember, billions and billions of no-bid contracts were handed to Halliburton and Bechtel in Blackstone in Katrina.
Mm-hmm. Again, you provoke the events that caused the profits. Katrina was an event that could have been avoided, but then a lot of money would not have gone into these private contractors' pockets. The Virgin Islands, there could be an avoidance of an attack in the Virgin Islands, but then all these contractors would not get all that free tax money, the subsidies from the taxpayer. All these things could have been avoided. But the reason they're not being avoided is because there's too much money to be made by those who provoke the problems, who are in it purely for the capital gain short-term versus the long-term health in any kind of democratic institution. So, of course, France is right to reject the Anglo-Saxon model. Of course, this woman is correct to try to reject the invasion of the Anglo-Saxon model. Now, these two people are front-runners to take over in France. They are going to bring in more of this Anglo-Saxon nonsense. As far as candidates here in France who are going to protect the country from this invasion and destroy the fabric of society here, I'm not sure who represents that. Whoever it is, maybe Fabian.
Yeah,
Fabius.
Fabian Laurent. There's Fabius and there's Jack Lang. But
Jack Lang.
He exposed himself as a bit of a misogynist when Ségolène Royal threw her hat into the ring. He did say something along the lines of, well, who's going to take care of her children?
Yeah. Well, this is amazing. People who come here, they say women are free here. They'll have a lot more rights. That's true in a sexual sense. Women have sexual rights in France. You don't find in Britain or the UK. Women can be very overtly sexual in public without being harassed. That's true. Mm-hmm. But as far as the family structure, the women are considered to play a subservient role,
mm-hmm.
which is so it's a very interesting mix-up of values and misinterpretations, and because people who don't really are not with feet on the ground, as I said, have an appreciation.
Anyway, I think she's going to win. That's my opinion.
Mm.
Yeah, I just feel like people just feel like they need change. Everything's in turmoil all around the world, and they just need change from these old fuddy-duddy men.
Quite possibly. Well, I think that's about all we've got massive time for.
And I'm going to play the music then.
Yeah, why not? Play a little music. Mm-hmm. And then we'll get back to, whatever it is we do here.
Getting ready for tomorrow's show.
Bye, y'all.